Uh-oh, the last cookie.
You can get a new box of cookies in as fast as an hour with Walmart Express delivery.
Are you my guilty self-conscious?
No, I'm the voice offering you promo code EXPRESS for free delivery on your first order.
Hey, who ate my cookies?
You mean, these cookies?
Order now. Welcome to your Walmart. Promotion valid for first express delivery order. $50 minimum subject to availability. Restrictions apply.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Our endometriosis special. That is what we are going to talk about, though, over the next hour today. Because, as you know, we've been covering this issue for the women of Ireland on this programme for the past 3 years. It is Endometriosis Awareness Month. So we're asking, what has changed in the past 12 months for the women of Ireland? If you're living with the condition, I'd love to hear from you today. You can drop me an email. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. I want to know, how difficult is it to get an endometriosis diagnosis here in Ireland? Had some really interesting emails, WhatsApps, texts coming in. Just saw some of them during the break there at news from Leah, Shauna, Julianne, Rachel, Helena, all sharing their experiences of living with endometriosis. But to talk us through some of the common myths that are out there about endo, I'm joined in studio today by Aoife O'Neill, who's a consultant obstetrician gynaecologist, and Yvonne Cunahan, who's a clinical nurse specialist in endometriosis, both at Talla University Hospital. You're very welcome. Thanks for joining
us.
Thank you. Yeah, great to see you both again.
Thanks very much, Andrea.
You might maybe first of all, Aoife, just explain for some of our listeners that, you know, maybe endo is a new term to them. They don't know a huge amount about it, how somebody gets endometriosis in the first place, what it is.
Yeah, thanks very much, Andrea. I think the awareness of endometriosis is increasing when you even consider back when I started as a consultant, you know, in 2012. And I think social media has helped a lot with that. But there's still a lot of confusion maybe, you know, as to what exactly it is. So it's basically a disease which is labelled as a gynecological disease because of the fact that it's associated with having little lesions in typically the pelvis that cause inflammation in the pelvis, and that then drives the cause for pain. And for some women, that disease process is a huge problem because there are many women who suffer from painful periods, but we're talking about a situation that drives a pain condition that means that person can't go to school or can't go to work because of the degree of pain that they're in. And so that's where it starts to become a major problem, because inside the body, you can't see if there's a disease process. Not like you've got a rash on your hand or something. You can see what's happening.
On your breast or something like that.
Yes.
The other thing I know from talking to people over the years, you know, Aoife and Yvonne, about this is that, you know, it's often hard to know whether or not it's just period pain. Is it endometriosis? Like what the barometer, you know, is or the parameters are for this.
Yeah. And Andrea, thanks for having us on again and for being such a champion for endometriosis. It is not normal to be in bed, to not be able to go to school, to not be able to go to college, to not be able to go to work. That isn't normal. So at that stage, you really, you know, there will be period pain associated every month that everyone gets, you know, cramping or whatever. But this is excessive. This is where you can't get out of the bed. This is debilitating that you can't get on with your life. At that stage, you really need to flag, yeah, this is an issue. And I think too many people, and for too long, it's been, you know, it's a woman's problem and, you know, get over it and everyone has a period. Because in fact, 1 in 10 women have this, and that is what really, you know, today we really want to emphasise. There's a lot more ladies out there that have this, that have, you know, that are living with
it. 1 in 10 is a huge percentage.
Oh, it is, and even some studies would put it at higher than that, you know, and we don't really actually have Irish statistics on it. So that's one of the things we really need to kind of work together in the future to try and understand a bit more about the Irish perspective and looking into it in a lot more detail. There's, you know, focus now on women's health research groups that are being put together to I suppose, build...
Get facts.
Yes.
Really, isn't it?
And build databases in an era where we're very able to use databases and have that at our fingertips.
I know that's something the Endometriosis Association themselves have been trying to compile when we met with them this time last year. Now, I'm thinking people listening today who maybe have identified, like you've said, Yvonne, that, you know, I'm in debilitating pain, I'm actually off work today, or I'm not at school because of this. So what's the first step, Aoife? Where do people go if they feel that they might have endo?
Yeah, so the first thing, I think what probably was missing in years gone by is that people wouldn't have even known to ask, could they possibly have endometriosis? So being aware that that is a possibility and that 1 in 10 women have this means that it's common. And that is one of the first myths, that it's that an endometriosis disease is a rare diagnosis. It's a common diagnosis. So people need to explore that with their general practitioner, because our general practitioner...
GP's first step.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's the person who's got your back and is in your corner about your whole health. Do you know? So they know all of the other aspects of your health problems, and they know also the direction of travel in terms of advice about where do you start with trying to manage this, and where would you be likely to need to be referred to if you can't get management of it at a first interaction with the healthcare team.
So we imagine you go to the GP. You're suspected of having the of endometriosis. Perhaps you've been given, or you're waiting to get a diagnosis. I mentioned, Yvonne, at the start that both yourself and Aoife are working out at Tally University Hospital. There's a specialist unit there now dealing with this. You might just tell listeners about that.
Yeah, we're one of two super complex endometriosis centres in Ireland, and there's us in Tala and Cork also. So we would be for very complex cases. We would envisage that the GP, as Aoife alluded to there, the GP might be able to deal with the stage one, stage two endometriosis and refer on then to a secondary gynaecologist. After that, it's really where there's bowel involvement and bladder involvement. That's where the patients come to us in Tala. These are really complex surgeries, and we need a urologist on the day as well, and a colorectal surgeon, so that's bowel surgeon and bladder surgeon. So that's what we mainly deal with. So we're trying to get it that we triage, that we just get to see the patients that really need to see us.
And how long is it? Like, how long typically will people wait, Aoife, to get to see, you know, yourself and Yvonne?
Yeah, so I think one of the big challenges with why there has been a massive gap in terms of diagnosing endometriosis is that the emphasis traditionally has always been on that it has to be diagnosed through having an operation. And like, that is not a small undertaking for young people that are worried, have they got this disease? And there's been a big lack in having access to any non-invasive tests for diagnosing endometriosis. So there's a lot of work and research going into that area about non-invasive diagnostic tests in the world globally, do you know? So Ireland wouldn't be alone in the big gap in terms of an average of 8 to 9 years getting a diagnosis.
Yeah. Like, I know a lot of our listeners living with this and dealing with it will be thinking, you know, I know we've the two specialist units and that's great, but if you're in other parts of the country, you're probably banging the door down to try and get in somewhere to get an appointment.
Yeah, I think, first of all, as with any disease process, raising awareness about what the disease involves and how to get help for it is such a huge part of letting the public know what to do, you know. And you've been Trojan in trying to fly the flag in that regard. The endometriosis guidelines in Europe, the Europe-wide guidelines now, have kind of realised that we're not really helping to manage people who might have endometriosis if you decide that every single person that could have endometriosis needs to have an operation to diagnose it. That's not really a very helpful way to approach things. So they've now, these guidelines are very focused on making sure that, you know, across Europe, the awareness raising at a GP level, that you have to consider that someone, yes, this is a possible endometriosis diagnosis I'm facing, and get started on what we know to be proper evidence-based treatments to help manage it.
Yeah.
Because endometriosis is a disease that is affected by your hormone drive. So your female hormones like estrogen stimulate the flares of pain that can come in the cycle.
There's a couple of other myths I just want to run through, because these are the things that come up all of the time. These are the issues, I suppose, that people talk about when they're among their friends around endometriosis. We talked about the myth that endo is rare. That's not the case. We know it's 1 in 10. Yvonne, like one thing you hear people say, you know, well, my mum or my sister has endometriosis, so sure, I must have it.
Yeah. I have to say, from experience in the clinic, there definitely seems to be a correlation. There is a familial element to it. When you ask, and it could be the aunt, or my mother just thought it was normal periods. Maybe she was never diagnosed. Or we'd also get women as well, Andrea, in that are maybe menopausal age and they're bringing their young daughter. And they're thinking, my God, I wish there was somewhere like this when I was being diagnosed, or, you know, I was just told it was normal. So research, as you say, is still going into it. But I personally would think that there is a familial. We do seem to, I don't know, Aoife, would you agree with that the clinic?
Yeah, there's a hereditary connection between mums, daughters and...
But
you know,
not automatic.
But not automatic.
No.
So that's really important to get across.
That
just because you know that your mum has had a diagnosis of endometriosis, it doesn't automatically mean that it follows that you will have endometriosis. And it's a little bit more complicated than just, you know, simple genetics that one thing means the other.
The other myth you often hear too, more pain means more advanced endo.
Yeah, that was something actually that I had to get my head around when I became an endometriosis nurse specialist. We could meet ladies that have very mild when they've had a laparoscopy. And I only say very mild, just that histology showed that it was mild. But to that patient, they might have more pain than the lady who needs us in the complex service. And they could have bowel involvement, bladder involvement. And their pain, it doesn't correlate. So that's why it makes it even harder, I think, Andrea, sometimes the patient with what appears to be the lesser endometriosis could have a lot worse pain.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about endo and fertility in a few moments, but Aoife, probably one of the more common texts I see coming in every time we chat about this, you know, this myth that if I have endo, I must be infertile.
Oh yeah, that's a big myth, and like that is absolutely not the case. And there are many women with endometriosis who go on and get pregnant, and you know, the endometriosis is found because they end up having to go and get their appendix removed or something, and they weren't even aware that it was there. And we do know that, you know, endometriosis is a cause in about 30% of people who are being investigated for infertility. So it's not, you know, just as simple as saying, oh God, if I have endometriosis, I'm going to be infertile, which is good to know.
I know. And that's something we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail in a few moments' time. The other myth coming in from listeners, teenagers are too young to have endometriosis. Fact or fiction?
Oh, that's absolutely fiction by our patient population. Mm. And it's been overlooked for a considerable number of years that could be the case. And so this is why the awareness about if your periods are that bad, the recent government document that they produced around women's health outcomes showed that 26% of people in the reproductive age, from when they start to have the periods to when the periods end, 26% of people have reported that they've missed work or missed school because of their periods. And nearly 50% in the age group between 15 and 24. Now, that's a very high number, 50% of women not making work or school because of their pain.
Particularly when we're talking about 1 in 10 in the first instance, you know, even having the condition.
Yes. But just to make the point, though, that 1 in 10 women are the numbers that have been diagnosed with endometriosis. But obviously, the pain condition around your periods doesn't always mean that it's related to endometriosis.
Just a very final quick myth on this as well, that you commonly hear, Yvonne, endo only occurs in the pelvis. fact or fiction?
That's fiction as well. Yeah, and they would be a lot of the ladies that we would deal with. It can be superficial, it can be on the bowel, but it can also deeply infiltrate the bowel. It can be on the bladder. It's been known as diaphragm and lungs. There's been cases as well, and other places on the body.
Okay. I know if people want to get a little bit more information, if they want to maybe hear more from yourselves and other experts in this area, Tallaght Hospital are hosting a talk on endometriosis with specialists happening the 26th of March. Is that right? Yeah, and that's next right. Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
A free event happening in Tallaght Library.
Wednesday.
26th.
This day of fortnight.
Yeah. So if people wanted to go along, they can do that free event happening there at Tallaght Hospital. Listen, just thanks to you both for coming in today to talk about some of the myths, the facts, the fiction that's out there around endometriosis and living with the condition. Aoife O'Neill, consultant, obstetrician, gynaecologist, and Yvonne Cunahan, clinical nurse specialist in endometriosis, both working at Tallaght University Hospital. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today to answer some of our listeners' questions. We're going to hear from listeners about living with the condition. If you want to join us, share your story. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. I just want to talk to you. I want to hear your stories. I want you to share your experiences of living with endometriosis. Plenty of emails and texts coming in. I mentioned and read some or saw some earlier from Leah, Shauna, Juliana, Rachel and Helena. One message I want to read. This texter tells me, I was diagnosed just last August, actually. I've been struggling with endo for years. I've had debilitating cramps, aches, incredibly heavy bleeding, going through super plus tampons in about 30 minutes. I was actually given out to by peers and teachers. I was told it was anxiety. Just get over it. It was an effort by me to try and get out of PE and classes. I actually had to find the word endometriosis through TikTok because even in my biology class, it was never talked about. There's more studies in balding men than endometriosis. Having this incurable disease makes me realise just how understudied the female body is. I find it all so disappointing. That's just one listener's experience. Darren is with me on the line today. Darren, I know you've shared your experience with us many times before, but has anything changed for you personally in the past 12 months?
Thank you for having me on, Andrea. No, I've had a really challenging time now the last 12 months, I have to say. I've gone from pillar to post. So thank you for having me on to share this.
So you had, I remember, I think from memory, you've previously had, you've gone through surgery. And I think the last time we spoke, you were waiting on a follow-up surgery. Has any of that progressed?
So I've had 15 surgeries in 20 years. I would be now in the high risk complex area. So in Ireland at the moment, we don't have anyone that is able to do my surgery, so I will have to leave Ireland. But because of the severity of the surgery in 2022, I'm too high risk to go into some of the surgery, so it's monitoring now.
So what does that mean? No more surgery at all?
No. The surgery that... So I need different surgeries, but the main surgery is the bowel. And because I've had so many surgeries, I've basically been told by an international specialist that if they were to do a surgery now on me, that the best outcome would be a stoma and the worst outcome would be I wouldn't survive the surgery.
So where do you go from here?
I have no idea. And it's very, very stressful, and trying to process that on a daily basis is now very difficult, to be perfectly honest. I also need to see a thoracic and I need to see a neurosurgeon. So we don't have any endometriosis neurosurgeons or thoracic in Ireland that I know of or that I can find either.
And can you just give us an indication, Darren, or explain why you would need to see, like, in what way, I suppose, is that aspect of your body affected?
So the right side, my breathing, I need to have that further investigated because the symptoms are correlating to diaphragmic endometriosis. And I also have 3 cysts on my brain. So we need to further investigate that and see is there a link to endometriosis.
So is the only option for you then to look internationally or look abroad?
Yeah. Abroad, and I'm so overwhelmed with trying to do the research that I just don't know what to do. And it was very difficult to sit my son down last year and tell him that this is the feedback I'm after getting from an international specialist, that if I was to have, to say, the bowel surgery, that, you know, I may not survive the surgery. So that was a really difficult conversation for me to have with my son last year.
But even processing the whole thing, I know at this stage it's been a big feature, Darren, of your life and consumed a lot of your time. But it's very hard to process the whole lot.
Desperate. Yeah, really hard. Like, you know, where do you start to process it? And for the last 10 years, particularly of the 20 years post-diagnosis, the last 10 years, it's getting worse. So I feel like life is moving forward for everybody else and I'm just stuck. And like, I was very lucky, and we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I was like officially homeless for 3 years, but I was able to live with my parents, obviously, because I couldn't afford the rent because I had no income coming in. So I got housed, which is great news. I got a house in December. And since I moved into the house, it's the reality of how did it get to this? Do you know? And I'm very grateful to have a house. But I had my own mortgage, my own business. I was financially independent. And now I'm completely dependent on the state because I cannot get treatment in Ireland.
Thank you, Darren, for sharing your update with us. And it's not easy because it's very hard, aside from the physical effects of all of this, but just even emotionally, you know, listening to you share your story and where you're at the minute. I just want to bring Ali in for a moment, Darren, because what's your experience, Ali?
So, first of all, Darren, listening to your story, I mean, my heart just goes out to you. Mine, I suppose, is very different. It started when I was 11. I would have periods that would cause me to vomit. I would shake. I would be very, very pale. So my parents, long story short, brought me to several different doctors. And they told me it was IBS or ghost pains or basically in my head. Or the other one was dysmenorrhea, which is basically painful periods. So fast forward to me being married and trying for a baby, and nothing happened for a year. So my husband got tested. He was fine. And I was referred to Dr. Croon in the Blackrock Clinic. And that woman is the reason I have children. She did a quick scan and she said, listen, I see it everywhere. It's on your bladder, on your intestines, on your stomach. And I'll laser it off. And within 6 months, you should be pregnant. And I was pregnant within 3.
Okay.
And then 2 years later, I had another surgery and the same thing happened. The thing is, it keeps coming back and it always will. There is no cure. And I have to go in for my 6th laparoscopy now. And there's so much scar tissue and the 2 C-section scars as well. It basically just gives scaffolding then for the endo to grow back. So I'm just kicking the can down the road, to be fair. And the fact that there is no cure, and there is funding now, which is brilliant to see. But my daughter has just started her period. She's 12 and she's already been in A&E. So she's only had 3 periods.
Right.
And we had her in there because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, I absolutely feel for the previous speaker, but
Darren, yeah.
It does affect my life a lot as well. Every single aspect. I mean, intimacy is too painful a lot of the time, depending on where I'm at in my cycle. At the moment, in the last 6 weeks, I haven't had a full meal. I'm surviving on oat cakes and a banana per day because the nausea is just through the roof. And I can't keep taking Motilium. I don't like taking pain meds either. But my daughter's confirmation is on Friday, so I'll take Motilium then so I can eat. But basically, without taking it, I can't deal with food. Because my endo on my tummy is so bad.
Like the impact of this, Ali, is like, it's incredible, you know. And I know we talk about it here a lot because a lot of our listeners got in touch, and it was an issue they wanted to chat about in the show. But it is so incredibly debilitating.
Oh my gosh! Every single aspect of my life, I've lost friends because no one wants to keep calling the girl who doesn't show up anymore, and it's always the same excuse: she's not feeling well, or she's having a flare up. So eventually the calls stop coming, and that's just the way it is, and I don't blame anyone for that. but it affects every aspect of my life. I mean, sometimes the kids come home from school and I'm so tired, they're saying, why is mum in bed? It's like, we haven't even finished our homework and she's gone to bed. Because the fatigue is just through the roof. I miss out on weekend, like dog walking, something so simple with the family. I can't go. I'm so tired. I'm in my pajamas for the whole day. And sometimes I just don't have the energy.
To do it. No, look, it's unbelievable. And thanks, Ali, for sharing your story as well. Like it's I don't want to keep saying that, but of course it's hard. Like nobody wants to be coming on national radio to share these kind of really personal experiences and not recognise how difficult it is to do that. Have we Leona with us? Leona, good afternoon. How are you? Can you hear me okay, Leona? You can.
Yeah, hi, sorry.
How are you? You wanted to share just briefly, Leona, your experience as well.
Yeah, well, I was quite young when I got diagnosed. Like, it took a while. I was very sick in school all the time. I was, there was really bad periods and everyone kept saying, oh, you just have heavy periods. You know, it's just bad cramps. You can't handle them, that kind of thing. But my mom kept pushing because she knew there was something wrong, like it wasn't right, like I was throwing up, I was getting like, you know, kidney infections from it, I was getting all kinds of like bowel issues and stuff. Eventually, I think I was about 17, 18 when I got diagnosed with it, because I had the surgery done where they burnt it, the laparoscopy. So I ended up having it again a few years later because it came back. And I was also trying for a baby for a long time, about 4 years with my husband. And luckily, we were one of the lucky ones. We did IVF, and we now have a baby who's a year old next week.
Fantastic.
So we had some good news, at least, about it.
Positive story.
Yeah.
So, and look, that's important to flag as well, because I know that was something, you know, that that our obstetrician gynecologist was keen to mention a little earlier today, that, you know, having endometriosis doesn't mean that you can't have a family or that you can't get pregnant. And, you know, Ali shared that very story as well, very similar a few moments ago. And it's good to hear the positive side of that for people listening today.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because when we were trying for so long and people kept saying, you know, oh, it'll happen. Just don't think about it and that kind of thing. And when you have endometriosis, it's always kind of there in the back of your mind, like, oh, I'm never going to be able to have kids kind of thing. But we were lucky that the IVF worked on our first try, and now we have our son. So,
I presume that the living with endo for you, though, is something that still continues, Leona.
Oh, yeah. It has. Yeah, it doesn't go like they do. Like, one thing I was told a lot was that if I got pregnant, it would go away. That was what I was told from doctors throughout the years, which isn't true.
No,
it doesn't go away. Once your period comes back, it comes back. Same with like the surgery. You know, I've had two now, and I'm in my late 20s. And they said that if I have much more, it would be bad because I'd have too much scarring tissue and it would cause more issues. So they don't want to do any more surgeries either. So it's kind of,
managing.
Yeah, that's the thing. The main thing they do here in Ireland, they just put you on the contraceptive pill. Even if you don't really want to be on it with all the side effects, it's the only thing that they really use to manage it.
Yeah, well, look, it's good to hear that, you know, and I suppose in the last year you have had some positive news as well, Leona, and thanks a million for sharing that story with us today, too, on the programme. We've been talking about this today because, look, it's an issue we've been chatting about here in Lunchtime Live for the last 3 years about endometriosis and people living with it and dealing with it in Ireland. It is Endo Awareness Month. You're going to hear a lot about this over the next couple of weeks. We were talking to singer-songwriter Ruth Ann on the show only last week about her story. We'll chat a little bit more about it too in the next couple of weeks. If you want to get in touch, if you want to share your own experience like Duran, Ali or Leona, you can email me lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. But thanks again to Leona, Ali and Duran there for sharing their experiences.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.
Uh-oh. the last cookie.
You can get a new box of cookies in as fast as an hour with Walmart Express delivery.
Are you my guilty self-conscious?
No, I'm the voice offering you promo code EXPRESS for free delivery on your first order.
Hey, who ate my cookies?
You mean these cookies?
Order now. Welcome to your Walmart. Promotion valid for first express delivery order. $50 minimum subject to availability. Restrictions apply.